Hi, Navy fans, and welcome to the very first edition of the Bird Dog Podcast. I'm Mike James, and I am joined by my friend and classmate, Andy Schmickle. Andy, how are you tonight?
I'm doing just fine, thank you.
Very good. This whole podcast thing was actually Andy's idea. He came to me with the idea about a month ago, and I am a little surprised that it took this long for us to do this. What kept us so long, Andy?
Well, like I think I've said before, I'm intimidated by your knowledge.
Yeah, hogwash.
But you do have about a 20-year head start on me when it comes to Navy sports knowledge. So, I think what it boils down to is we both were either too lazy or too busy to write much this summer. And, you know, we needed to get something out there to keep Navy fans engaged. This is our attempt at that.
Yeah, it has been a busy summer, both for Navy and for me personally. So I was a little concerned about how I was going to keep the blog going with the family obligations that I have on the horizon. And hopefully this is a way to keep on doing this. Not that I'm going to stop writing, but it's probably a lot easier to shoot the breeze with you about Navy issues and news and notes of the day than it is to write it down, because not that my blog is some kind of huge production or anything, but you would be surprised how time-consuming it is. Well, anyone who's written a paper in college knows how long that takes. Now, just imagine doing something like that over, you know, two or three times a week.
Yeah, so, you don't have to do game tape on a podcast either.
Yeah,
when you can do it wouldn't make much sense though.
we'll see how long I can get away with not doing that. I have a feeling that's the one thing everyone likes. So
yeah, there might be a revolt.
But anyway, speaking of the things that have been going on this summer and especially recently, let's start with the first of our topics tonight, which we'll lead off with the Notre Dame game. CBS has picked up the Notre Dame game. We're going to have a triple header that day. We'll start with Army Air Force. We'll follow up with Florida, Georgia, and then Navy Notre Dame in prime time. Andy, how awesome is that?
It is amazing. Anytime you can get the world's largest outdoor cocktail party to be the lead-in to your game, you got good things going for you. And really, outside of having to get out of the FedEx parking lot at midnight, if you're going to be in attendance, there's really nothing to complain about with this deal. It's just CBS coming through yet again for Navy.
Yeah, it's really fantastic, and you know it's funny. You think over the course of Navy's extensive football history, we'd have a primetime game on network TV at some point, but when you think about it, maybe it isn't that surprising. It's only been a fairly recent phenomenon that we've had all these channels and all these games being televised. Once upon a time, it was, you know, a game of the week on ABC or something.
Absolutely.
So we wouldn't have it. So what do you think, you know, in terms of the time of year and when we're playing this game, what kind of benefit do you think we're getting from this, other than just, you know, CBS getting a good game if it's anything like it was last year?
Sure. And yeah, let's all hope it's at least as good as it was last year, because that was a classic. But I mean, there's just all kinds of things, you know, great about it. I think we've talked offline a little bit that, you know, one of the most amazing things about it is it's a November primetime game.
Absolutely.
And it's easy to put a Navy game on primetime against a big opponent early in the season when you've got a lot of FCS or, you know, Sun Belt competition stepping up against the SEC instead of interconference play. And so, you know, getting this kind of recognition, this type of exposure at that type of the year, it's just really a confluence of events that's kind of sending us out of independence with a bang.
Yeah, you know, it's prime time for, you know, it's prime time that day, but it's also prime time in the college football season. It's November. It's when you get conference games going. It's it's really, this is when you have the prime matchups that everyone wants to see in conference play, and for Navy and Notre Dame to be taking center stage like this is something really special. It's really good for the program. And if you remember, we talked about this in our first attempt at a podcast, but if you remember back when Navy first joined then the Big East and there was a lot of talk, Coach Niumatalolo kind of made some waves about scheduling and saying, look, if the conference schedule makes it so that we have to cut one of our games, we're keeping Notre Dame. And Air Force people kind of took offense to that.
Yeah, I think the proper word was, the proper terminology was, I think they had a conniption.
Conniption is a good word to describe that.
Yeah, but then you look at this and you say, see, Air Force, this is what we meant. You know, when exactly. We play Air Force, we kick off at 9 a.m. out in, or 9:30 in the morning out in Colorado Springs when it's mist coming off the field. Not that wasn't cool. But Air Force Navy doesn't get put on prime time. Navy Notre Dame, it gets us a lot. And I think that's what Niumatalolo was going at with his comments, is that the Air Force rivalry is great for the service academy sphere, but we need to operate in a larger sphere than that, and that's what the Notre Dame game brings to us.
No, absolutely, and this is exactly what he meant. You look at, kids didn't grow up wanting to play against Air Force. You know, it's no offense to Air Force, not that I have any problem offending Air Force, but it's just kind of reality. Kids grow up wanting to play against Notre Dame. And if you look at the typical, Navy's recruiting has picked up in recent years, but the bulk of the rank and file, the profile of your average Navy recruit is still that guy that didn't get all the 1A offers, still wants to prove himself against the best, still wants to play in an NFL stadium, a packed NFL stadium on prime time against the teams they grew up wanting to play against, like Notre Dame. This is on a whole different level in terms of what it means for Navy recruiting. This is something that coaches can go out, and you made the point, this is a differentiator. This sets us apart from Air Force and Army when it comes to service academy recruiting.
Yeah.
This is a game that we have. It's always going to be there, and we value it, and we're going to keep it.
Yeah, and, as Air Force has shown, in the later part of the Fisher DeBerry years and now into the Calhoun years, there's the line between being the best service academy and the second best service academy is very narrow, and it's not that difficult to hop onto one side or the other of it. We saw Navy take over, and then Air Force got it back for a couple years, and then Navy came back again. But there's never been, since 2003, it's not like Navy's ever beaten Air Force by 30 points or vice versa. So any little incremental step that you can get that's going to help pull a recruit into you over one of the other service academies is just going to help you out. And that's exactly what this is doing for us this year.
Right. And it's not even just recruiting against the service academies, which is obviously a huge goal. But, if we want to compete in the American Athletic Conference going forward, we're going to have to win recruiting battles against, maybe MAC schools, maybe some of our conference mates. We're going to have to win some 1A recruiting battles. So we don't want to give up the kind of recruiting advantages that we have in this annual game against Notre Dame. Now, as evidenced by it being put in prime time, it shows the value that it has for television, and it kind of demonstrates the value that the coaches place on having this matchup in their back pocket to keep that. It's kind of like a reminder of the old days of big time Navy, the 60s and the 50s with the Forrestals and the Staubachs, that holding on to that Navy Notre Dame game. It's a throwback, and it's very important just to the tradition of the school, and thankfully, it's very important to TV, too. And also remember, you know, speaking of TV, the American Athletic Conference, their television contract only goes out 6 years, and Navy right now isn't part of it.
Right.
It just, and it's because Navy's contract with CBS Sports is so ironclad that they can't get out of it to join in the ESPN contract for the American Athletic Conference. It's not a coincidence that those two are overlap. You know, it's exact 6 years left on the Navy contract, 6 years for the AAC. They're waiting for Navy to be a part of this, and they want properties like the Navy-Notre Dame game. This game and Army-Navy are the two biggest things that Navy as a program bring in terms of television value to the conference. So, again, it just underscores how important this game is to the program and now to our conference. So it's a different way of thinking of conference considerations, but it's part of what we bring to the table. So it's a big deal, and this is good news all around.
Yes, it is.
So, Notre Dame game was the first topic. The other somewhat more recent thing is we have Media Day coming up this weekend, and we expect to see the new Under Armour uniforms unveiled. And some of, while the official unveiling we expect to see this weekend, we have seen some images leaked out online. Our friends over at Navy, what is it? Navy Online or
the Peppers folks, right? They became Armed Forces Gear or whatever it is now.
Yeah, Navy Gear.
Navy Gear, which then grew into Armed Forces Gear, which then ended up having Peppers shut down on Main Street, which I still hold. It's still vacant. I think the Naval Academy should rent that out and open an off-site visitor center on Main Street in Annapolis. I think it's a great idea. Make it happen, Chet. You got your that's a free idea for you right there.
I didn't know it shut down. I didn't know Peppers
just
shut
recently,
down.
Just in the last like 6 months, their online business is doing so well that the storefront became kind of secondary and optional. And you know, with rent prices what they are in Annapolis, they just didn't need that location anymore. And so, you know, it's empty right now, and hopefully something good will move in there.
Well, I think they actually run the gear stands at the stadium too now, don't they?
Do they run the goat locker and all that?
Yeah.
That may be the case.
I think that they took that over a while ago, and if that's the case, they probably make more in Navy football weekends at the stadium than they ever do in the store walking up and down Main Street. So I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah. But hey, Chicken Roots is still open, so.
Oh, well, yeah, that's a given. But, where was I going with that? The Under Armour uniforms.
Yes.
So we expect to see them unveiled this weekend at Media Day. However, online we've seen on the Navy Gear store some images of the replica jerseys that are coming out. So we have an idea of what we think they're going to look like. What do you think, Andy?
TBD. I wasn't particularly thrilled about, you know, for those of you who haven't seen it, I'm sure we'll post a link when the blog goes up. So make note of that, Mike. You don't make a liar out of me. But it looks like they've got some horizontal stripes across the jerseys behind the numbers, six of them to be exact, which, you know, either they're trying to make everybody look like some of the striper tools, or there's some other meaning.
Don't be bitter now. We've graduated a long time ago.
Hey man,
I had
one stripe. I had a stripe once upon a time. I was a wardroom rep. But seriously, so why that might not exactly float my boat with the stripes on there, we'll see how it looks when it's actually, you know, padded up and all that. But there are a lot of anchors elsewhere, and that's awesome because you know what that means.
I know what I hope it means. There's nothing I want more on this earth than anchors back on the helmets. Oh my gosh.
Exactly.
Gold helmet with the blue anchor. Let's do it.
Yes.
But I'm looking at the images online, and first, and you're kind of right, you got to reserve judgment to see it in pads, because if you judge Navy's uniforms by what the replica logo at Pep or the replica jersey at Pepper's looked like, even with the old uniforms, which we all liked, I don't think anyone's going to be falling over that. It doesn't look right. So we have to wait till we see it in pads. But I kind of like it. I wasn't sure at first, but I kind of like it. Do you remember when I first wrote about the Under Armour switch? And I pointed out, hey, look at Northwestern. Yep. You know, Northwestern's, everyone was worried about, oh, we're going to start looking like all the crazy Maryland uniforms. Right. But I pointed out, look at Northwestern. They look great. It kind of looks like that with that the highlight stripes behind the numbers. Right. Northwestern has a different pattern, but the idea is kind of the same. Yeah. Yeah. I think it has potential. I think it could look good. The only thing I really want is I want it to look kind of classy. I want it to, not classy is overused, classic.
Yes.
You know, not necessarily too modern, but a classic type of look and something that's uniquely Navy.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, if what we've seen from the store images is what we're going to get, then it would satisfy that. Yeah. And I'll be fine.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest. It's not some revolutionary change. It's subtle at best. I feel bad for the linemen because everybody knows, you know, I'm a big guy, and the first thing you learn when you go to big guy school is that horizontal stripes are not flattering. So, you know, maybe they'll go vertical for the linemen, but that might cost us a timeout or something for having dissimilar uniforms. But yeah, no, I mean, look, we don't have, it's not Maryland pride. We're not having, you know, Navy pride. We don't have the U.S. Navy emblem emblazoned on everything, though. Who knows, that could look cool too, because I personally am a fan of Maryland pride, no matter how much the internet likes to try to make fun of it. But yeah.
Yeah, so. I kind of like them too.
I like the, you know, I'm a big fan of the t-shirts and stuff that we have out there too. And I think that there's going to be some, I saw there's a cotton shirt they just released with the don't give up the ship in the actual script of how it's written on that flag up there, Memorial Hall, which looks pretty sweet. Some other stuff going out there. I already have one of their Performance Tech Navy football shirts that I picked up at the mid store. And it's a good rival to the Nike Dry Fit that we had for all these years before. So, and, you know, I mean, it's Under Armour. It's a local company that I think they're going to treat us well. So I'm buying. I wish I could afford to buy the stock because, Lord, Under Armour stock prices just keep going up.
Wish
up,
you
up.
Did that 5 years ago.
Yeah, seriously. But yeah, no, I think we got good things in store on the gear front.
Yeah, and something else to consider is that we're coming off of the bowl game and the Army-Navy game. The last memory that people have of the uniforms Navy was wearing were those uniforms. And we all agree, those were the bee's knees.
Yes.
Those were just beyond awesome. And it's kind of unfair to compare our everyday normal uniform to what we were wearing in the Army-Navy game and in the bowl game. Because those were special one-off jerseys. If you compare it to what Navy was wearing just week in, week out, I think it's very similar. I think it's fine.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of funny. I'm curious to see how people react if these are actually the uniforms, because once upon a time, everyone was worried, oh no, Under Armour, we're all going to look like wacky Maryland every mm-hmm. week. And then now, are they going to look at this and say, what is this? It's so plain. What we wanted wacky Maryland.
Right.
So I don't know. We can't please everyone. I think it's a classic look. I think it'll work for Navy if that's the case. And I'm really looking forward to Media Day this.
Yeah, and I got to say, just before we move off the topic of uniforms, to go back to Maryland real quick and the wacky Maryland, that outside of the uniforms that we wore for Army-Navy and the bowl game, I thought that the best-looking uniforms that I saw last season were the ones that I saw in person at the Military Bowl. In
Maryland at the bowl game, the Stormtrooper look.
The Stormtrooper white Maryland pride. It was just, I mean, my dad made the Stormtrooper comment when they came out. He was like, yo, they look like Stormtroopers coming out of the tunnel. And even though Cato from Marshall tore him up on his way to setting up a Heisman campaign for himself for this year, I think Marshall just launched that this past week. They look good out there, and that just again makes me very bated breath about what's coming down the pipeline from Under Armour.
Yeah, I agree. And anchors. Let's go more anchors. All the anchors.
All the anchors.
Well, yes. Well, speaking of media days then, so we have Navy Media Day coming up on Saturday. Well, I hope I get this podcast posted tomorrow, because otherwise this is going to sound all outdated. But we have Navy Media Day coming up. Earlier this week, we had American Athletic Conference Football Media Day. That kicked off on Monday. And we had, you know, some really interesting comments from Mike Oresko, the commissioner of the league. And maybe not too interesting. I think they're kind of expected. But the whole theme of his remarks were about, we are a power conference. Don't make no mistake. It made it very clear he does not respect the idea that there's a Power Five and everyone else. He made it very clear on no uncertain terms, yeah, that any conversation that involves power conferences needs to involve the American Athletic Conference. Just wondering what your take is on that.
Right. And, I actually, looked up here. He says, I will admit I do not care for Power Five designation. We do not accept the notion we're not a power conference or this have-not tag that some people use. We have resources and we have enormous potential. And, enormous using the word potential, is ignoring the fact that they have enormous results from the last year, too. I mean, nobody in the Power Five conference can claim a men's basketball or women's basketball championship. And, the Big 12's champion certainly can't claim a BCS bowl victory. And those were all in the hands of the American. And, I think this Power Five kind of arose from, it was more on the media side of things and trying to apply labels to everything as the restructuring was going on in the off season and a need to have something easy to latch onto as far as the name goes. And it was very easy to take a look and see, oh, well, this is who the American's going to be. And well, clearly you're not going to be a Power Five. And now it's kind of like, okay, well, we can't go back on saying they're not a Power Five because we established this already. And I think that, yeah, we're going to have less money, but if you can still produce on the field, do it again this year, do it again next year. I mean, we're going to be right there with everybody, and, ESPN's going to have a hell of a deal for their contract that they got.
Yeah, well, no kidding. They have the, like you said, both the basketball national champions and you have a BCS Bowl winner sitting in the conference looking like a great bargain right now as far as that goes. But I think, well, there is some de facto Power Five designation, both in terms of the amount of money that they are making from these television conferences. It's just far and away more than all the other conferences combined in one of the Power Five conferences. So there's no getting around that.
Absolutely.
And it's also, it's kind of a self-made designation in that these are the conferences that are colluding with each other. When we talk about NCAA reform and they are the ones who want autonomy. And everyone else is kind of resisting that breakaway. So there is some, it is a de facto designation, whether it's power or not. I think I agree with you. That's kind of unfair, because if, looking at just based on results from last year, if the American Athletic Conference doesn't fit the profile of a power conference, then what does?
Right.
They did just fine for themselves. So, but it's really just in the television age, just who's watching, and that's something that, even given what the American Athletic Conference has accomplished, the numbers are that's still an uphill battle. So I think this is really a case of Oresko just striking while the iron is hot. We've seen this a lot from the Mountain West too, when they had Boise State have a good year, or back when Utah and TCU were still in the conference and they had good years. They would trump up the same thing. I think this year is what, you know, the results that we saw this year from the American Athletic Conference are above and beyond anything we saw from the Mountain West, with a bowl win and two national championships in basketball. That's just incredible. So it's kind of a target of opportunity right now for Oresco, which is fine, you know, but it's frustrating to see this and kind of see how the media treats the Power Five conferences. You know, no one ever questions really their motives. Everything, and we're not really going to talk about O'Bannon in this podcast. We'll get to that. Hopefully we'll get to that at some point. But everyone always questions the motives of the NCAA, and they question, everything that comes from the Power Five conferences in terms of things like paying players, like they call it full cost of attendance, but that's a euphemism. You know, that's the full cost of attendance is what they're really talking about is a stipend, basically. You know, sure, we'll pay for everything, but the stipend is the part that's the really the trigger here, and no one wants to talk about, you know, what the true motivation is. What's happening here with where this separation, where they're talking about this reform, what's really happening, these conferences are making so much money from television now. I mean, and they just don't know what to do with it. You know, the goal, people talk about all the money that's made in college sports right now, and it is a lot, but all this money, it's not like they're going out to shareholders or anything. This money goes right back into these athletic programs to build themselves up and make them winners. You know, that's the value that they bring to the school. If we talk about athletics being the front porch of a university, well, then winning teams are what get attention. So they reinvest all that money back into, you know, facilities and coaches and whatnot. You know, you want to pay, get better coaches, retain the ones you have, and keep on winning. But they do all that now. They have that advantage now. And I don't want to... You couldn't say that these power conferences are necessarily threatened by schools like UCF and Boise State, but they're definitely annoyed by them. You know, they don't want them stealing their thunder. They want to hog the winning for themselves. And so they see they have all this money, and the question becomes, well, what more can we do with this to even further separate ourselves and make it even that much harder for these other schools to beat us? And what we see is, well, what if we paid our players a stipend? Well, see, now the question, if you're a recruit and you're looking to go choose between a couple of schools, do you go to a so-called Group of Five school and play earlier? Or do you go to a Power Five school and sit on the bench but make that $2,000 a month?
Right.
You know, then you, that's something you really have to weigh.
Right.
And so no one talks about it, but the Power Five schools cloak this in a they use the excuse, I don't want to say excuse, but they kind of pull at the heartstrings when you say, oh, these we're just trying to take care of our athletes.
We want Billy Bob to be able to go home and see his mammy and pappy while he's on summer break. You know, that was actually something I heard on ESPNU podcast today. We were talking to ACC coaches at ACC Media Days. I think it was Ivan Mazel brought that up, and the coach actually kind of poo-pooed that notion of, you know, well, it's not about him being able to afford to go home. It's about, you know, give him the cost. And, well, yeah, okay, if he can't afford to buy that plane ticket to go home, then that's an added benefit. But that's not what it's really about. It's like, yeah, okay, guy.
Well, but that's exactly right. That's how they sell it. But the true motivation is to bury everyone else, to create that separation. And there might not be an official Division IV, but they will be a de facto Division IV, in that these are the schools with money, and that's just the way it is. And you can see it in scheduling with the you know, more conferences scheduling against each other, having more conference games with themselves, and they're separating themselves, and that's something that, as a conference commissioner, this is what Mike Oresko has to fight against. You have the only thing that a conference commissioner like Oresko has going for him is public perception. And you have to hammer it home as much as you can, because the only way that these Power Five conferences are able to separate themselves is because they assume that no one will miss games with all these other conferences. You know, if you look back at like the Bowl Alliance days, you know, that the precursor to the BCS, the Pac-10 and the Big Ten weren't part of it. They stuck with the Rose Bowl. Right. So if the number one or number two team were in either of those conferences, they weren't playing in the so-called national championship game. And so it just didn't have any legitimacy. It's kind of a similar situation. If the only way that the Power Five conferences can get away with this, can kind of justify this, is because people don't see schools outside of that group as legitimate contenders for championships. So what you have to do, the only thing you can do if you're outside of that group, is work public perception so that it doesn't seem legitimate to not include your group. And that's what Mike Oresko was getting at. And that's, you know, that's what the Mountain West had tried to get to in the past. Now, they, I think, were a little more over the top with it, and I don't know if they had all the results to kind of back up the bluster, but you know, the idea is the same. That being said, it kind of points to some frustration over what, you know, what the American Athletic Conference could have been. You know, we look at trying to force your way to the table like that, and the original, when the Big East started falling apart and you lost Rutgers and you lost Louisville and Syracuse and Pitt, and it became obvious that it wasn't going to be, even though there wasn't going to be a BCS anymore, it became obvious that the Big East was no longer a big BCS league. What they tried to do, the initial vision was, okay, if we can't be a BCS league, we will be a coast-to-coast conference of the best of the rest. So, Boise, come on in. San Diego State, let's go. You know, and it's frustrating seeing, not that I don't have tremendous respect for the conference now, because I do. I think I still think it's a very good conference and the right fit for Navy. But it's frustrating when you look at what it could have been. That would have had appeal.
Yeah.
And that would have had a lot of, I think, media love if, you know, with the Boise types and with the programs like Cincinnati left over from the Big East that have had tremendous success. You know, a conference like that, I think, makes a very legitimate case for public perception of look, we're playing good ball too. Here, we need to be part of this conversation.
Right. And, you know, while the I think the American will still be the best of the rest, it's not going to be in such a fashion as it would have been with those teams that were originally going to be there. You know, just because they're the best of the rest, they're not going to have all the best of the rest. And, you know, it is. It's unfortunate that, you know, for lack of a better term, that kind of Boise reneged on the deal because Thompson and the Mountain West athletic directors decided to just throw money at them and make them come back with you know, what happens as a result of that be damned. You know, we're not going to worry about the long term because we need this short term save. And you know, it worked out for them in the short term because Boise and San Diego State went back, but it hasn't even been a season, or I guess it's been one season of this, and you can do a Google search and come up with plenty of articles from plenty of newspapers of cities of colleges who are getting hosed in the quote-unquote bonus money and are suddenly realizing what Boise costs their schools. And It's not just now that you're going to have the haves and the have-nots between the Power Five and the Group of Five, but now the Mountain West has created their own strata within there, so you're going to have the have-nots and the really have-nots.
Yeah, absolutely. And for anyone listening that isn't quite sure what Andy's referring to, when the Mountain West brought Boise State back in, they actually packaged Boise's home games as a separate television package. So it wasn't just Boise's home games. There were other Mountain West games packaged in with it too. But they were packaged separately so that Boise State will never be shown as part of the Mountain West's primary television contract on CBS Sports Network. Boise State's games can be sold out, can be subcontracted basically to anyone. So as part of that, the conference would award teams who appeared on major national networks, where it's ESPN, ESPN2, or any over the air broadcast networks, they would get what they called a bonus for those appearance. I think it was $500,000 for a Saturday appearance on one of those networks.
$300,000 during
the week, something like that. But they called it a bonus, but it wasn't a bonus. It was just a way to redistribute the money that they were making. It was a distribution model, not a bonus. This isn't money that came in on top of their established television contract. This is how they were divvying it up. And what's happened is that some schools are making a whole lot less than they would have with just equal sharing across the board. Boise, on the other hand, especially because, you know, there's no bonus for appearing on CBS Sports Network, but Boise can't appear on that network, so that means they're getting on ESPN, they're getting on ESPN2, they're making a ton of bonus money. And they knew this was going to be the case going in. They knew they were the hot commodity. And the Mountain West knew that Boise was the hot commodity. And they kind of sold their souls to get them. So it's a very unequal revenue distribution within that conference. And what you're seeing now is Boise has set it up so that they are, instead of being on somewhat equal terms with the rest of the American Athletic Conference, they make about the same amount of money, but no one else in the conference is going to make that much money over time as Boise State. So yeah, they should dominate that conference. They have.
I think
every
one
advantage.
Of the easiest ways you can, I think everybody can relate to in terms of, you know, how much money you're making. You can kind of look at it as if all these schools were you know, working kind of service industry jobs, and normal distribution of money is everybody gets minimum wage. But the way the Mountain West did it is, okay, everybody's getting the tip wage, which is something ridiculously low, like $3 an hour. And then you get to keep the extra tip money that you get. And Boise State gets the Friday and Saturday night dinner rush. And New Mexico and UNLV are getting Tuesday mid-afternoon. And they're just not getting any tip money because they're getting the short end of the stick when it comes to, you know, matchups. And when they do have a good matchup, CBS Sports is picking those up to give themselves good inventory. And you end up with something like last year where the TV deal cost Air Force a couple $100,000. Actually, it ended up being almost exactly the same amount of money that they needed from USAA in order to fly out to Annapolis for the Navy game. And then Boise ends up making a few million dollars of this bonus money. And that's just going to continue to happen. Even if Boise has another 5-loss season like they did last year, they still, it's going to take a couple 5-loss seasons or more to get Boise to the point where they're not going to be as attractive, because somebody's still got to fill those, you know, 10 o'clock at night Saturday games, and Boise's a great option for that if it comes down to it. So,
and yeah, you're right. And but it's a short-sighted vision, though, on Boise's part, I think. You know, they wanted to be a big fish in a small pond, and they got it. You know, they're figuring is, hey, we can win this conference every year, have a good shot at going undefeated, and we have a chance to be the group of five representative, you know, in these access bowls, you know, that they'll be playing on New Year's Eve. But I think that it's short-sighted in that we both agree that in most measurable ways, the American Athletic Conference is better than the Mountain West, certainly the Mountain West in its current state. But the Mountain West has a head start on the American Athletic Conference in terms of working the media and working hype. I think in terms of perception, most people don't really make that much of a distinction between the two. And if it's the Mountain West versus the American Athletic Conference, as far, if you're a Power Five conference, you really don't care what the result is. Let them duke it out between each other. You know, what difference does it make? It's kind of a war of attrition. But if you had one conference that was clearly the best and a coast-to-coast conference of the best of the rest that included Boise and San Diego State and, heck, throw in Air Force, you know, that would have been, you know, that would have had a lot more momentum in terms of forcing a seat at the table, you know, getting that legitimacy that you need in order to get public perception on your side, saying these guys need to have a seat, they need to be included. As, you know, a house divided is, in this sense, you know, doesn't really do anyone any good. But, c'est la vie. So, no use crying over that at this point, ship sailed. I guess.
I don't think anything's going to happen unless BYU decides they need to join us, and I don't think that's going to happen, so...
No, I don't either. You know, with BYU, they're, you know, we know why independence is tough. But BYU has certain advantages.
It's not that tough when you have ESPN throwing $7 to $9 million your way every year for your TV contract, like we recently found out, which, by the way, is far more than Boise State is going to make in the Mountain West, even as the top dog there. I think that with the way the breakdown goes in the Mountain West, if a team gets to one of the what do we call now, the access bowls or whatever made up name they have for the non playoff bowls, they get 50% of the revenue cut from that. And so even if they did do that and maxed out their TV bonus money like they did last year, they'd probably still just be pulling even with BYU in terms of the money they're making. So it's a
BYU's not going back to the Mountain West. I don't know why that theme ever comes up. No one who looks at the dollars involved in the situation would ever suggest that, because it makes no sense. BYU is, independence is, it's difficult for BYU, but as hard as it is, it's still more lucrative than the Mountain West ever was or ever will be for them. This is the Mountain West. Who knows how they'll sell their souls to get BYU back in the conference. So, I don't know. I think, you know, BYU has their sights on the Big 12, obviously. Who knows what the Big 12 wants. Unless there is something that unusual that forces BYU into a conference, and we know how hard it is with scheduling. They do have ESPN brokering games, but still, you get into the meat of the schedule in November. I don't know. Maybe they'll run into some difficulties. I think there are still enough Western schools, you know, Mountain West schools, they can talk all they want about not wanting to schedule BYU. Yes, they do. BYU's a draw. Everyone wants to go to play BYU. The former WAC schools all love playing BYU. There's still a draw, so I don't think that's ever going to come to pass. But if BYU were to join the AAC, then maybe. But I don't see that as being as really being a possibility. But again, these are ships that have long since sailed. We can talk about something that the conference did right. And that is the divisional setup, though. that's news that came out earlier this summer, and I think it was a fantastic move both for the conference and for Navy going forward.
Yeah, Navy getting put out west, I think, is a real boon for our program and for the American. Keeping a solid east-west divide like they did is going to be good overall. You know, you get the Florida schools playing each other every year without needing to have some permanent crossover type situation, which has pretty much ruined conference play in the ACC. I mean,
oh gosh, it's so terrible. I have no idea who's in the Atlantic or the Coastal in the ACC. I have no idea who's in the Leaders and Legends.
Well, in the Big Ten's defense, they got rid of that for next year. They did go East and West, but yeah.
No,
but
they did.
I'm not just speaking about not knowing who's in what division in the ACC, but now that the ACC's 14 teams, they have, and they refused to go to a 9-game schedule, you're playing 6 games against your in your division, and then you're playing 2 games outside of your division, but the ACC's maintain these ridiculous permanent crossovers so that Georgia Tech plays Clemson every year and Duke plays Wake Forest every year and NC State and Carolina play every year. But the problem with that is that means that the other 6 teams in that conference, you only get a home game against every 12 years. So NC State's permanent crossover is not Duke, so that means NC State and Duke, who I mean are just the heart of Tobacco Road along with Carolina and Wake Forest and the heart of the ACC, much to Maryland's chagrin down in North Carolina, you know, now they're going to be playing Duke twice every 12 years. So you know, what I'm getting at with keeping like the Florida schools together is UCF and USF get to play each other every year without having to fix a cross-divisional game, which means that in a 12-team conference, you're going to play every team home and away, you know, every few years instead of every decade plus.
It makes way more sense. I don't really blame the ACC for not going to a 9-game schedule just because they do have a Notre Dame in there now. That's a whole different wrench.
Blame them for not going to 9. I blame them for not getting rid of the cross divisional. I think that they're either going to have to get rid of the cross divisional or they're going to have to make it so that cross divisional games no longer count for who goes to the title game. Because if you look at last year, what happened in the ACC, you know, Duke won the Coastal and went to the title game, and it was a great story. And what gets lost in the story is that Duke's 2 games against the Atlantic Division were against winless in conference NC State and terrible Wake Forest, who's been terrible for a very long time. Georgia Tech, meanwhile, had to play Clemson. Georgia Tech lost to Clemson. Had they had Duke's schedule, Georgia Tech would have ended up playing in the ACC championship game because I'm positive Georgia Tech would have beaten NC State and or Wake Forest. So, you know, it's crummy in that point in that you get these log jams of 5-3 or 6-2 teams, and it just turns out that, well, 5 years ago we decided this was your permanent crossover, so now you've got this baked-in advantage. And we see the SEC complaining about it, too. You know,
I really don't care what the SEC complains about.
But I digress.
You know what? You're right, and I hear you, but I'm not gonna say one bad thing about anything that gets Duke into the ACC championship game. Poor Duke. Let them have their moment. I'm not gonna crap all over that.
I just wish they didn't have to have their moment at our
expense. But your point is right though. You know, this is, if you're trying to build a conference, you know, it doesn't feel like a conference if you're not playing all the teams in that conference. You know, it's the American didn't overthink this, which is great. They didn't think, oh, we have to separate the Florida schools, we have to separate the Texas schools. No, they didn't do that. Just keep them in the same division. So, when you're building a conference, what really makes a conference feel like a conference and feel successful as a conference is building rivalries. And the best way to build rivalries is, the easiest way, is just through geography. The teams that are close to each other play each other, and there you go. So you divide East and West, and by keeping all the former Big East teams in the East, you at least don't scrap what you've already built. You know, Cincinnati is used to playing USF. You know, we're used to seeing, you know, UConn and USF and that kind of a matchup, which is, you know, no one's getting nostalgic about UConn and USF playing each other, but it's there. You know, you don't want to dismiss it either. I think that's a good thing. I think it's good for Navy, in particular, being in the West. You know, Chet talked about wanting to be a national school, and playing in the West serves that. I get that a little bit. I don't know if that's that big of a deal. But it does keep us in Texas, which is, yeah, you know, recruiting ground number one for us. You know, we still get to play in Florida, assuming that USF and UCF are you know, split on our schedules. We'll still get to play in Florida at least every other year. That's a huge improvement. I remember when Paul Johnson came down here to Jacksonville and talked to our touchdown club down here 1 year. He mentioned the need to get to Florida more. He wanted to play games in Florida. And that's probably why Florida Atlantic is still on our schedule, or at least as far as I know it is. We'll
nice
see
name
how
drop,
that,
by the way. Oh, when I was talking to Paul Johnson.
Oh, I wasn't talking to him. I was just one of 150 people.
Hey, man,
in the
it's
room.
Not like Navy's missing out. Over at Air Force, you can pay $30 and go hang out with Troy Calhoun and get a tour of the locker room, apparently. I don't know if you saw that or not. I don't want to go on a big diversion there, but they have this Football 101, which I think started off as football for women, and that's not me being sexist. That was the way Air Force pitched this, was to get people to come in and meet Troy Calhoun's wife and learn about football with the coach. But anyway.
Yeah, I heard about that. I mean, lots of schools do that.
Well, I want to be able to take a tour of our locker rooms for 30. I'll pay $30 to go on a tour of the in the innards of the stadium. Let me do that. We got those sweet new rooms in the south end zone corners there. Let's party. Chet, idea number two. I'm just full of ideas.
Well, hold on to that thought, because we'll talk about the stadium in a minute. But, you know, it's far as, you know, Navy being in the West, it's good for Navy. It does keep us in the places we're used to recruiting, namely Texas. We still get to Florida every other year, at least, which is fine. It also puts Navy in a division with all the private schools in the conference, which, you know, there's no one that Navy really matches up. You know, there's no other service academies in the conference. It's hard for Navy to be it's not like the Patriot League or anything. There is no 1A football Patriot League, but it's as close as we get. You know, we've played series against Tulsa. We have a series against SMU. You know,
Gans Trophy, baby.
Yeah, Gans Trophy, the priority of the program right there. You know, so we've played Tulane in the past. So these are good series. They're good competitive matchups.
Yeah, and the schools, you know,
Navy.
All these schools are making the right moves as they're coming in. Houston, Tulane, the stadium work that they have going on, they're making the strides to get their programs in alignment with kind of, I guess, the modern era. You know, no more echoing Superdomes in New Orleans for Tulane once they get that.
Oh my
once
gosh!
They get that stadium.
The worst college football experience, other than the 70-7 loss to Georgia Tech in Weatherby's last year. But the worst college football experience I have ever had has been Tulane games at the Superdome. They pipe in fight music over this tinny loudspeaker. The place is an empty cavern. It's the pits. And now you look at the on-campus stadium that they're building. It's the right size. It looks great. Houston Stadium looks amazing.
Yeah, it does.
SMU has a fairly new stadium. UCF has a fairly new stadium. Cincinnati is doing extensive renovations of their stadium. You know, UConn, you know, they've had their stadium for a while, but it's still pretty new. You know, good facilities in the conference. So yeah, that is a plus. And speaking of facilities, by the way, you know, Navy was going to be on that list too. You know, we've gone through, you know, the stadium now looks way different than it did, you know, 10, yeah. 12 years ago. There was, if you remember, there was going to be a phase four, and we actually saw some renderings of what a stadium expansion would look like.
Yeah.
What do you think, where do you think that stands now? What do you think the possibility is? Do you think we're going to go ahead with that stadium expansion, or do you think that's on hold?
I mean, I have a feeling that it's kind of wait and see mode right now. You know, we haven't heard much about it since, I don't know how long it's been since we heard anything about it, actually. But, you know, I could see possibly expanding the luxury boxes as it was discussed across the top if there's the demand for them now. Because I'm, you know, anytime I go to a game, you know, everything looks pretty full as far as luxury boxes are concerned. So possibly that would happen. But I believe it included adding an upper deck to the north end zone, trying to get that capacity up to around 40,000. And I think we've got to see how the conference plays out in terms of people coming to games. You know, if we're selling out every conference game when we get in there, then yeah, I can see that it'll probably be picked right back up where it kind of dropped off. But if, you know, conference games against Memphis and Houston and SMU deliver attendances that, you know, are kind of wishy-washy, and if it's a beautiful day, we sell out, and if it rains, the stadium's, you know, a little bit empty, then maybe that's something we don't pursue right now, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you know, the stadium's great right now. I look back at pictures just from when we were in school in 1999, and it's like looking through like a Time Life classic flashback book or something. It's just, it's so vastly different now than it used to be. And it's an already modern stadium in most regards. You know, I think we could use a little bit of upgrading to the concourses maybe. But even those have come along in the years as we've gone through these multi-phase renovations. So, you know, if I was Chet, one, I'd have a sweet house on the yard, and two, I'd probably wait a little bit and just see how this goes. You know.
Yeah, you know, you did a post on the blog a while ago, and actually when this first came out, and you were looking at Navy games in the past and how we've done in terms of percentage of capacity based on opponent. And it was clear that when we played BCS caliber opponents, we were playing Rutgers, when we played Pitt, you know, we were selling out. I mean, we were, you know, the stadium was overflowing.
Yeah.
And when we were joining what was then the Big East, I think the momentum that we were looking at was, well, now we're playing in a conference full of these guys, so we're going to have to expand because the demand's going to be there. The question now is that still the case with, you know, as the conference has been gutted? And you're right. I don't think it is right now necessarily. It might be if we were in the Eastern Division and we were playing Cincinnati and we were playing USF and to a lesser extent UConn. But in the West, probably not. We're still see those teams rotate through, but not as often as I think it would justify expansion at this point. And I think a lot of that, you have to understand where Navy sits in the marketplace, in the local marketplace, in that is they represent value. Navy football, it represents value. You know, you're competing against two NFL teams, you're competing against two Major League Baseball teams, you got NHL, NBA, you have a BCS conference school down the road. You know, where does Navy fit in? It's value. And when you have those, When Navy is playing those BCS teams, they're bringing more value, I think, to the local consumer, and that's why those games sold out.
Yeah.
Because you want to see the name brand teams. Not that it's anything against the teams that are in the conference now, but we know who we are. We know what we represent, and it's going to take some time to, like you said, build those rivalries and get the excitement around the conference teams. And I think over time it might be something that happens. What we don't want to have is a situation like Maryland has, where they went through a stadium expansion and it was all luxury boxes, and they sat empty. It's been kind of an albatross on that athletic department, because, you know, they built up luxury boxes. That's the opposite of value. You know, that's premium, and people weren't shelling out for premium seats. Now, as they play in the Big Ten and they start getting Ohio State and Michigan, you know, maybe that'll come through, but that's tough.
The downside for them is that it's not going to come through with their own fans right now, though. It's going to come through with other fans buying up what they've got. And we don't want to create that situation here either, I don't think, where we don't want to add, you know, 8,000 seats and have it be 8,000 fans from the other team coming in. Because God forbid, should the mids have to get loud for a mid-tier team. But, yeah, and the Maryland thing, and it's just been, you know, it's been a death spiral for them over there. And I don't think I'm mistaken in saying that Maryland is going to be holding some Big Ten games off campus at pro stadiums, which is just kind of embarrassing.
Are they? I haven't paid attention. I haven't heard.
I'd have to go back and check. I might be mixing it up, but
Maryland's kind of an interesting case because, you know, how are fans going to react? Do they react to the big names like getting Ohio State, Michigan, and I think they will react to playing Penn State again. I think they've been chomping at the bit to renew that series. But yeah. Do they value the big names of the Big Ten, or would they value the traditional rivalries of the ACC?
And just real quick so that I can say that indeed I was right, Maryland's first home game against Penn State will actually be held at Raven Stadium, which I think is kind of embarrassing. But, you know, it's one thing for Navy to play Ohio State, Notre Dame, Army, you know, at M&T, but, you know, for a Big Ten team to move a home game against an in-conference foe out of their home stadium and into a pro stadium, that's just... To me, that screams, you know, the desperation that they're in to try to get this money that they need to make their athletic department solvent again and to add back some of those sports that they've had to cut. But anyway.
Maybe. I mean, there's something there. But it's an opportunity, though.
I hate Maryland, Stadium, so I'm going to hate on them anyway.
Well, yeah, I know, but you know, Raven Stadium seats 20,000 more than Bird Stadium, so you can't pass that up. And of course, it's probably going to be 20,000 Penn State fans, but you know, c'est la vie. But I think they've played home games in Baltimore in the ACC. I think I went to one once upon a time.
Really? Huh.
Like long Florida time State. Ago. Was it Georgia Tech? Maybe. I don't remember. But regardless, they expanded all these luxury boxes in their stadium. And that's not where they sit in the marketplace. And at Navy, we don't want to make a similar mistake. You know, if we're not adding that value, then I don't think we necessarily would drive that same amount of demand, that same kind of demand. So I think it's the right move to wait and see on stadium expansion. We assume that's what they're doing. We haven't heard one way or another.
And, you know, I think we've got an athletic director that we can have faith in making the right decision. You know, Chet's been through a lot. He's done a lot. And we're better off for having him as our AD, and I don't think he's going to put us in a pickle.
No, not in a financial sense. I really don't think so. Yeah. You know, the move will be made when the time is right financially. Anyway, I think we've gone on for a good long while now. We've been going for about an hour, so I think it might be a good time to wrap things up. Any final thoughts?
No, just looking forward to seeing what comes out this weekend with the uniforms. I'm sure we'll have time to catch up next week on that. Definitely interested to kind of share some thoughts on some of the more meta things going on in college football as we wait for the season to start. You know, I know you mentioned O'Bannon before, and there was, you know, a recent settlement agreed upon for some things this week that's going to have impacts on that. So it's just, you know, we're inside 30 days now, I think, till kickoff. So let's just get ready. Everybody have some fun. You know, for those of you who know where the message board is, if you guys want to throw us some questions or something to address, I'm sure we can start something like that too. But it's good talking to everybody. Thanks.
Yeah, it's this is it. This is the first podcast. There's no going back now. I hope you know what you started here.
I started a great excuse to not have to write.
Yeah, well, there's that too. So, all right. Well, thank you very much for listening. Hopefully we'll get any technical issues ironed out. And hopefully this is something that we can keep up for a good long time now. But thanks for listening. Thanks, Andy, for joining. Looking forward to talk to you again next week. Looking forward to Media Day this weekend. And we'll keep this we'll see how long we can keep this going. All right. Thanks a lot, everyone. And we'll talk to you again next week.